The slides are going to look super familiar because this is actually the exact same lesson from last week, just geared towards the majority instead of the minority. Initially, when I was looking through the curriculum, I thought about combining the two, and then I did change my mind because I feel like those really are two separate conversations we need to have when we're talking about how we work through some of these issues as a church seeking to build a biblical form of unity, as a church seeking to include biblical diversity. I really think we do need to stop and recognize, one, that there are minority cultures in our church, and it can be any of those 10 categories that we talked about, not just ethnicity. And then, two, the majority culture is something that we're probably more familiar with, so I think it's going to be beneficial to talk about it. So the slides are going to look almost exactly the same, and the verses are exactly the same. This is going to be a super similar lesson to last week, but it has a dramatically different application. So let's pray, and then we'll get started with it. Heavenly Father, thank you for today. Thank you for this opportunity to be in your house, Lord. Help us as we seek to understand more and better and deeper how to build biblical unity in our church, Lord. We ask this all according to your will and for your glory. Amen. All right, so I changed the title this time. Because I use the same slides week to week. I forget to change the title, so I changed the title slide this week. I'm super proud of myself. I just needed to show that off. All right, so what are we doing? Council for Christians in the Majority. So like I said, largely the same lesson as last week, but we're going to flip-flop the application now and talk about the majority. And then next week is actually going to be our last week for this. We're going to have a panel discussion. I'm going to facilitate a conversation with our pastors where we're actually going to look at working through disunity or working through those different divergent opinions on certain things. I've got a couple of slides built with some leading questions. It's going to be great. If needed, I'm going to provide the diversity, so I get to just come up here and say crazy things and the pastors have to argue with me. So I'm super looking forward to it. I think it's going to be... I know, right? How is this different from any other Sunday? So I think it'll be good. I'm going to take about 10 or 15 minutes, though, before we get together to talk. The curriculum actually gives you six different points to consider when working through a conversation like that. So I want to make sure that I give you guys those 6 points. And then as we have our discussion, as we facilitate those talking points, we're going to directly apply those 6 things to the conversations we have. And we're going to have real, meaningful, immediately applicable conversations. So I'm super excited for next week. I'm glad I finally figured out how to do it. It was through conversation with many people. It wasn't just me, I promise. I'm not anywhere near intelligent enough to figure that out. So what are we going to do today then? We're going to look at the same verses. We're going to look at the same categories that Paul said is necessary to build this type of unity and diversity in the church. But we're going to flip-flop and turn it on its head. We're going to talk about genuineness and affection, the self-forgetting, the zealousness, the consistency, and the sacrificialness. So Romans 12, 9 through 13. I'll read it real quick here once. And then I want you to tell me what we talked about last week. So be thinking about that or find your handout from last week. Let love be genuine. Abhor what is evil. Hold fast to what is good. Love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Do not be slothful in zeal. Be fervent in spirit. Serve the Lord. Rejoice in hope. Be patient in tribulation. Be constant in prayer. Contribute to the needs of the saints and seek to show hospitality. So this is a great verse, a couple of verses. It really does define what our love for one another in the church should look like. So you guys help me out here. Genuine in affection. What did Paul mean by genuineness in affection? Because this isn't just affection. We know what affection is. How can one then be genuine in that? Does anybody remember? Yeah, this is like real. This isn't something where you just tolerate or put up with somebody else because they're different. This is an actual effort that you're making. This is moving past love to liking them. Anything else? No, that's good. What about self-forgetting? What did Paul mean by self-forgetting? Yeah, this is the idea that we're always going to look on the needs of the brother and sister before we look on our own needs. You know, we're going to forget ourselves in that relationship. We're going to look at the needs of others far more than we're going to look after our own needs. This is going to be a competition to see who can look to the needs of the brother or sister better. Who wins in that competition? If you're constantly trying to outdo one another and showing deference, who wins in that competition? It's Christ. Christ wins in that competition. So yeah, absolutely. What about zeal? What did Paul mean? How does Paul help us to show zeal in our relationships? What did that look like? I gave you 5 or 6 things that you could use to demonstrate your zealousness. Does anybody remember any of them? Does anybody have their handout from last week? They can read a couple of them off.
Create solutions, not just criticize.
Yeah, right? Don't just be the negative Nancy. Like, if you see an issue and it's a legit issue, bring it up, but then, like, do something about it. I mean, it's super easy to just sit on the sidelines and criticize, right? I can do that all day long. I mean, I got opinions on top of opinions on top of opinions. It's super easy to just sit there and lay them all out on Facebook. What does that do, though? Where's the helpfulness in that? Yeah, we live in a messed up world. I know that. You know that. That's not facilitating anything. So that zeal then is doing something about it. Yeah, absolutely. Read one more. Yeah, right? Remember, God gave us a mechanic to demonstrate our zeal. So, like, if you have problems, talk to people about them. If you have a problem with a person, talk to that person with it. If you need to work through something, God gave us mechanics to do it. So use those biblical principles to have that conversation and then continue that conversation and do something else. What about consistency? How does consistency help us demonstrate our love to our brothers and sisters in the church? Are we going to disagree sometimes? Does that give us the right to throw people through windows?
Yes.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, it solved problems in church history. There's a reason, like, we actually have an event in church history called the Defenestration, where they solved an argument by throwing somebody out a window. I mean, we really need to bring that kind of problem solving back. But our windows really are. It really wouldn't work here. We're going to disagree, right? Still got to love your brother even when you're disagreeing about it. Go ahead.
Your willingness to stay with something, to be constant, really shows how much you value it.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, too. If we really care about this type of biblical unity and diversity, then when things get diverse, when things get divergent, we love unity so much that we're going to work through it and get to it, and we're going to come to that biblical reasoning and understanding together with it, using all of these other things, which might include sacrifice. How do you show your love for your brother and sister by sacrificing? How can you? How have you? Is this purely monetary? I mean, could be, right? I mean, I only get paid so much a year, and I have children that, like, need to eat multiple times a day. I, too, enjoy eating. You know, I have a car. There's all this other obligations. I own a house, so, well, bank owns the house, you know. So, you know, like, we have other obligations with our money, and yet we give to this. What about time? You know, I do a lot of stuff. I would prefer to do less of it, but I do it because it's a sacrifice. How else? Give me one more. What about preferences? Can you sacrifice a preference to love your brother or sister? Yeah, right? I mean, think about worship. I'm sure we all have our favorite hymns. I'm sure we all have our favorite songs. I'm sure we all have our preference when it comes to that. But we live in a diverse church, and we use a diversity of music here. I can sing a song from this century, even though I would just as soon sing something else. Or the other way around. If I only prefer music from this century, I can sing a Wesleyan hymn. That's okay. It's not going to kill you. I mean, maybe, but it's harder to sing, right? Yeah, we can sacrifice preferences to love one another. That diversity and that unity is okay. All right, so let's talk about the majority then. Let's apply all of these then directly to the majority. Because keep in mind, some of us are in the majority in some categories, like I'm white, so clearly a majority in this church, and the minority in others. I'm from West Virginia, which makes me a minority in this church. I was not born and raised here. However, some of these categories are going to have a bigger impact than your life experience than others. You know, being right-handed or left-handed, not an issue, not as much. I mean, unless you're like assigned seating at desk and stuff like that. But being the only woman in an office setting, that's going to affect your life more. So when we're talking about this, remember, we're still going to hear a little bit of what we heard last week, but we're going to hear some new things here because there are instances where you might be both the majority and the minority. So we need to hear both of these from that standpoint. So let's start over again with let love be genuine. Abhor what is evil. Hold fast to what is good. So for the majority, what does it look like for that love to be genuine? We talked about the minority. Real quick, what do you think that would look, how would that look different in the majority than the minority? Yeah, among the majority, it's easy, right? Because, like, we don't have to make any of those other sacrifices. We share this same cultural background. We share whatever consistency that comes from that. We eat the same things on our hot dogs, you know. How does that then relate to the minority, though? Well, you have to show that same kind of genuineness there. You know, and this isn't just some kind of surface tokenism. You know, it's not that, well, I can check that box because I have that diversity. No, this is still moving on to that actual love, that actual liking. To be genuine in affection isn't something that you can just muscle up. You have to make the conscious decision, yes, but then you have to let God work through you to do that, to enjoy it, to have genuine affection. So in other words, trust God that you need these friendships and you need them because how they complement you. But you also need them because of the warmth and the grace that you find there. Remember, the bottom line of any relationship that we have in this church isn't cultural background, isn't age, isn't educational background, isn't ethnicity. It's what? It's Jesus Christ. So again, no matter how different that person is, they're still a regenerate church member. They have the same relationship that Jesus Christ has, that you have with him. So you can still find that genuineness there. Over time, we can trust God to build those friendships with people we don't have in common with, but we should pray that they be real, genuine friendships. It's easy to just feel that affection in other friendships. This isn't just some sort of tokenism. This is actual affection. And we can do it. And it's something that in the majority we do need to be concerned about because it's easy to not do it. Because we're not always self-forgetting. Love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. How does that relate? How do you then relate that outdoing one another and showing honor to a majority relationship with a minority? Teach my lesson for me here for a second. Because I think you guys can get this. There might be like actual other verses in the Bible about how to handle this relationship. Maybe Paul struggled with this. Well, didn't struggle with it, but gave some advice to people that were. I see people thinking.
Well, we go out of our way to...
Yeah, so in the church, if there was an issue that wasn't salvific, but was a practice issue, what was the advice that Paul gave that church? Is it going to kill you to honor that? No, it's not. Twice. I'm thinking of two specific instances in Scripture where Paul gives that kind of advice. What's one of them? Yeah. Yeah. So here's an issue where some people were seeing this meat offered to idols as this, oh my goodness, that's an abomination. You can't touch that. It's as of the devil. And there are other people in the church saying, it's cheaper than the rest of the meat. Like, I'm on a budget. I'm going to eat this meat. And what was Paul's advice to that relationship? One person's right, one person's wrong? No. He said, if it's an issue to your brother, it's an issue to your brother. Be sensitive to that. And if it's not an issue to you, then it's not an issue to you. Oh, yeah, so when we're self-forgetting, one of the things that we do need to think about, though, is the majority culture is often invisible to those that are in it. Think about it like this. All of you sound hilarious to me. You all have an accent. You don't hear it. You don't think you have an accent, but you have an accent. Now, you all are listening to me saying, no, he's the one with the accent. Clearly, I have an accent. I'm aware of that because I don't hear it up here. Well, that's kind of the way culture works. So if you're in a majority culture, you may not notice it. So when you're self-forgetting, it is a conscious effort to sit there and say, maybe everybody doesn't see or hear the world the way that I do. If you think some major issue in the church is something that's specific to your age group, then it might be. But you're not the only age group in our church. There are other people having other issues. It's easy to assume that other people see basically the same way that you do. And when you share a background with most people, that assumption's much stronger. So it is something that we have to be aware of when we're talking about this. Otherwise, we kind of end up with this stereotyping issue. So let me give you a couple of ways here to think about that. So remember that. Just be aware of it. Know that if you're in the majority of the culture in a setting, you might not be aware that you're in the majority. Some of it's visible, obviously, right? Ethnicity is an easy one with this because you can just, at a glance, tell whether you're in the majority or the minority. Demographics, other demographics, it's a little bit more complicated. You don't know a person's socioeconomic background. You don't know a person's education background. You don't know a person's cultural background, where they were born and raised, their family dynamics. You don't automatically know that right off the bat. And it's dangerous to make that assumption that just because I came from a two-parent home that was averagely middle class, that everybody that I bump into is in the same boat as I am. My wife's family's not in the same boat as I am. You know, I'm an only child. She's the fourth of five. She grew up in a minister's home. I grew up in civil servants' homes. We had different experiences, even though she looks like me. How do you find that stuff out? Well, where's my clicker? There it is. Build real friendships with people who are different. So you don't know that kind of stuff about people until you, like, get to know them, talk to them, learn more about them. There's nothing like an in-close perspective as someone travels through life to help you see where your assumptions aren't as universal as you thought. Do you have the kind of friends that you can see that in? If not, maybe make a conscious effort to get to know other people. Here's another one I like. Listen to sermon applications that don't apply to you. I mean, we do this, right? We kind of triage sermon applications as they come at us. Oh, I'm not married. This doesn't apply to me. I don't have kids. This doesn't apply to me. I'm A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and this is H. This doesn't apply to me. Well, maybe if you listen to those other sermon applications, you might find out what other people are like. You know, maybe you're not lonely. Well, maybe other people are. Listening to the pastoral prayers on Sundays, what the pastors pray can clue you into struggles others might be having that you aren't. So again, this is a conscious, deliberate effort to do this. Maybe just even think about different experiences as you pray through the directory. We have a church directory. Are you using it as a quick reference guide for people's cell phone numbers? Or are you using it as a tool to help you with your prayer life? Maybe you should use this as a tool to help you with your prayer life. So as you're praying through the directory and you stumble across the young married couple or the older married couple with kids or the old married couple without kids, you can think about what that older couples without kids, sorry. My wife keeps reminding me that I'm getting closer and closer to not being one of the young ones anymore, although I will hold to that opinion until I'm physically able to not hold to it. But thinking about those other demographics in the church, how do you find out about them? By looking in the directory. Pray through the directory. See some of those other people with some of those other experiences. And if you don't know how to pray intelligently for that person, well, go back to what I'm saying. Build real friendships with people that are different so that you can more intelligently pray for that person. Maybe you just need to use your imagination. We've heard the phrase sanctified imagination, but try to think about what it'd be like to be a safety officer in a healthcare system currently in the middle of a global pandemic. To think about somebody that lost their job because their factory shut down because they didn't have the orders they needed. To think about the people that are trying to make decisions about when and where to send their kids to school and how that's going to work, or if it's going to work, or if I have to quit my job to make it work. Here's the cool thing, though. People write, like, books about that. So maybe change your reading list. People make documentaries about it. You know there's a whole section on documentaries on Hulu and Netflix? Like, that's where I live. Now I have Disney Plus, so I live in, like, that Star Wars category. But we already had Hulu, so we bundled it. And then I got ESPN Plus, which gives me all my hockey. So I was just, that was the best $13 we spend a month. Anyway, we have access to all of this media that's out there. We don't have to just sit down and imagine what's it like to be a family of color being evicted from their homes in Milwaukee because there's books about that. We don't have to stop and think about what it's like to be certain other things because there's podcasts about it. You know, we have access to all this information. Maybe we should broaden our horizons a little bit so that you don't have to just imagine it. And then maybe that leads you to ask real questions. I mean, I'm not saying that you, like, stop people on the street interview style and, like, hey, you're clearly different than me. Do you have a different opinion about me about this? But as we build those relationships, as we understand a little bit more, maybe that gives you enough capital to ask that person, hey, how do you feel about this? You know, I know you have a different political opinion than I do. What's this decision look like to you? Or going out and finding those divergent viewpoints. The internet, Google it, you'll find it. You know, we have the opportunity here to overcome this, but it's an effort. You know, we're inherently intelligent, inherently inquisitive people. So it's in our DNA to ask a lot of questions. So maybe we can use that as part of this. I mean, there's a way to do it without being super weird about it, but maybe this is something that we can do more deliberately so that you do understand. It's hard to see the water you swim in, but being part of a living church is making the effort to do just that. So think about these things as you go through and try to realize that there is a significant difference. I think we have a great biblical example of it here in 1 Peter 3:1-7. Now, 1 Peter 3:1-7 is a passage about what? Marriage, right? So automatically a whole bunch of people just shifted into neutral because I'm not married, right? Or a bunch of other people just shifted into neutral because I've been to every marriage conference this church has ever done. I think I know what I'm talking about when it comes to 1 Peter 3. But maybe listen to an application that doesn't apply to you here for a second. It says, likewise, wives, be subject to your own husbands, so that even if some of you do not obey the word, they may be won without word to the conduct of their wives. When they see your respectful and pure conduct, do not let your adorning be external, the braiding of hair, the putting on of gold jewelry, the clothing you wear, but let your adorning be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which in God's sight is very precious. For this is how the holy women who hoped in God used to adorn themselves, by submitting to their own husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. And you are her children, and if you do good and do not fear anything that is frightening. Likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, since that they are heirs with you of this grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered. So how in the world does this help us understand the same thing? Back up a couple of weeks when we were talking about the image of God. Remember we talked about Adam and Eve? The most fundamental diversity that God created was man and woman, right? Because here's Adam in the garden doing his Adam thing, goes through all the animals, and what's he say? This isn't working. So God creates a woman from Adam, and what was Adam's initial response? Not, what is this? You're different from me. I'm going to name you, and you can go hang out over there. You know, he praises God. He thanks God. And then God gives them instructions on how to be unified in the most inherent diversity that we can have as a human race. That's what this is talking about. This is talking about the same degree of otherness. It's how to navigate innate differences between two people. That's why it's a good passage for this class. So think about it like this. The wife is tempted to fear because she's choosing to submit to an imperfect man. The man is told to live with her in an understanding way, to be considerate, to live life and make decisions cognizant of how those things will feel to her, to make it clear that he understands her world, and that's how she'll know she's cared for. So husbands, we look at this and think, yeah, that's great, awesome, be considerate of my wife. I got it. I buy her flowers. I take her out to dinner. I'm understanding my wife. I don't really think that's the same thing. I feel like those other things are things that you should probably be doing with your wife, but, you know, not 100% necessary. Yeah, women like flowers and women's like other things, but there's like other things that can happen over here. Living in that understanding and considerate way is like necessary as air category. I feel like we're really talking about two entirely different things here when we talk about that. And why do I say that? How does this verse end? If the man's not doing this, what's his relationship with God like? Yeah. God sees it a little bit differently. Peter couches this in the idea that your prayers will not be hindered. So if I'm not being considerate of my wife, God's not going to listen to my prayers because I have set myself against him. I'm doing evil, and God hates that. The authority dynamic in a marriage can be invisible to a husband, but never to a wife. So when a husband blithely and disinterestingly ignores that dynamic, God calls it evil. I think the same goes for relationships we have here at church. If you're in the majority culture, you might be blithely disinterested in the dynamic between the majority and the minority. Oh, that's super uncomfortable. Or, I don't have to deal with that. It's not bothering me. Or, oh, that's something that's happening in another church, in another city. It's not happening here. I don't think that's being zealous. I don't think that's outdoing one another and showing honor. I don't think that's being fervent in love. The principle we see in marriage is hugely beneficial to us here. Blithe disinterest when you're the privileged party or the party in authority isn't neutral. It's oppressive. So for those of us in the majority, we have to be zealous in our love. Questions about that? Comments about that? Anybody want to bicker with me about that? Feel free to. I'm not an authority figure. I'm just a guy teaching a Sunday school class. Go ahead.
Well, right?
That's why this is like a thing that we have to die to ourselves daily about, I think. You know, that's the reason why we have those type of commands. Like, this is a sanctification issue. And sanctification isn't just a one and done thing, right? Oh, I hit that level. You know, we're not Nazarenes. We don't get to that perfectionist level. Like, we understand it's a continual upward struggle. Hep. We don't have all of our teeth.
So, you know,
I'm wearing shoes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Case in point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and that's the thing is when you have that right relationship with God, it's going to come out in your relationship with other people. That's why, again, I think this is tied up to that relationship with God for the husband. Peter goes on to say, for the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous and his ears are open to his prayer, but the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. And that's what I was just talking about, so I just forgot to advance the slide. So when we're not being slothful, when we're being zealous, when we're being fervent, when we're serving the Lord, I think that's exactly what we're looking at. I think that's one of the ways that we can demonstrate that zeal as the majority. You know, in the minority, we talked about different things. I think this is where this lesson diverges greatly from the minority council, is because I think as the majority, we have a different relationship here. So what about constant? Romans 12:12 says, rejoice in hope, be patient in tribulation, be constant in prayer. If you're in the majority culture, instead of ignoring these issues, you need to be constant in prayer for them. You know, we do some of that on Wednesday night with some of the prayer requests that we make, but you should be doing that individually as well. I should be doing that individually as well. The need to be constant should remind us that these things do not change overnight. We should take Paul's call to consistency to heart, whether it's in this church or another in the near future, whether you're here for your life, whether you're just passing through, make it your ambition to invest in someone. You'll be amazed at the beauty of what can emerge simply by taking that kind of consistency and commitment. So if you have that kind of zeal, it's going to also demonstrate itself in consistency, whatever your circumstances are. I don't want to belabor this point because really the next point's where I want to camp for the next little while. But any other thoughts about that? About how we can demonstrate that type of consistency? Okay, here's where I want to camp out then. Romans 12:13, contribute to the needs of the saints and seek to show hospitality. So, how can we in a majority sacrifice? How can we contribute to the needs of the saints and seek to show hospitality? The sacrifices that those in the minority make are somewhat implicit and automatic, but for the majority, many of those sacrifices have to be sought out and embraced. We're not forced to make them. That's where the idea of being zealous and proactive leads into that sacrifice. So Paul here is saying that nothing is forcing you to sacrifice your money or to be hospitable. You have to make a deliberate decision in order to give those things away. That's the parallel to being the majority in the church culture. You need to make a deliberate decision in order to sacrifice. So when we're thinking about this specific verse here, what's the first thing that comes to your mind? Contribution has the idea of cash money, right? Okay, so that's part of it, but let me ask you a couple questions then. Do you know people in our church well enough to be aware of physical needs you could meet? How do you look for opportunities to give your money to help others in the church? You just throw in whatever you have in the benevolent offering at the end of communion? Not saying that's a bad thing. I mean, that's what I do. But thinking about this too, do you know people well enough to be aware of a need that you could meet? Can you buy somebody a gas card because you know they're hoofing back and forth because they're dealing with some family sickness issues? Do you know that maybe they don't have the ability to go pick up something and you happen to be the guy in the church with a truck and can go pick it up for them? Or stow and go seats in your minivan? So how do you look for those opportunities? How can you look for those opportunities? And maybe one of your experiences can help somebody else with some. So just a couple minutes, real quick. How can you? How do you? Right. If you're praying for an opportunity, God might very well give you that opportunity. So that's certainly an easy, well, not an easy thing to do. But if you pray, God, show me a chance to bless somebody today, don't be surprised when God puts you in contact with somebody that you need to bless. And that might be financially. How else? Yeah, if you're building friendships with people in the church, if you have enough of a relationship with somebody at church where you can stop them in the foyer and say, hey, how you doing? And they say, oh man, I got to do A, B, C, D, E, F, G today. okay, great. Can you help them do A, B, C, D, E, F, G, even though you have H, I, J, K, L, M, O, P to do? Yeah. One more. Or Kevin.
Sometimes it's probing for it because we are, especially as Americans, we're very self-sufficient. We don't like to ask for help.
Yeah. You know, I'm the guy that if you ask me how I'm doing, I'll just be like, yeah, I'm fine. Because, like, on the whole, yeah, largely I'm fine. But, you know, if you dig down and you're like, well, how's work? You know, I'll talk a little bit about work. Well, how's your heathen children? Okay, I'm talking about my heathen children. Well, like, how's, you know, like you dig those, you know, do a little bit of work. Sacrifice some of your comfortableness in asking some difficult questions. Because that's another thing that you can do here. Can you sacrifice your interests for the sake of including others in your friendships? Can you sacrifice the way you spend your leisure time to spend it with somebody else? So money, yeah, but what about time? How can you sacrifice time? And not just in a you need me to hold something while you do something type of way. Because that's certainly part of it, don't get me wrong. But are there other ways?
But the guy needs friends. I mean, his social is such an important thing.
Right.
And then, like you suggest, of course, that's how you find out needs. But I mean, he.
Yeah, these all largely overlap because they're all driving at the same point. They're all driving at how you can make that investment in another person, even if they're not in the same socioeconomic stance that you are, family situation they're in, ethnicity that you are. Whatever that 10 barriers that we set up when this class started, we can drive down through all that to get to the Jesus bit if we do some of these things. What else does a time sacrifice look like?
Well, sometimes it's, I already have plans.
Right.
But they could be adjusted. And if, the need comes up and you're like, well, adjusted.
Yeah, you know, they're my plans. I made them. I woke up this morning knowing that this is what I'm going to do. And, you know, it's like I own my day. Like, I have anything to do with, you know, like, we try to exercise our control over what we can exercise our control over, but in reality, how much do we actually control our day? I mean, I drove up here from Watertown. How many opportunities did I drive by an opportunity to not make it up here? You know, but I just set the cruise on a little over 55 and drove up here, you know, because I can control that. Well, you know, just because you thought of it doesn't mean it's the greatest thing in the world. If somebody else needs something from you, maybe that's the better thing in the world. I've been arguing for like the last 45 minutes that it might be. Are you willing to make sacrifices that aren't going to be noticed? Is there something that you can do just for one person? Is there something that you can do that's behind a closed door? Sacrifices in a diverse church will necessarily involve sacrifices that others don't notice or even understand. Are you willing not to get patted on the back for doing something? I mean, we don't talk about that as being a motive, right? But sometimes it is. You know, oh, I'll go out of my way to do this big thing because, like, other people will see me do it. Okay, well, what about if there's nobody around to see you do it? What if it's just running to Walmart in the middle of the night for your neighbor? You know, because they're homebound. Is anyone else going to see that? Cashier at Walmart doesn't know why you're there. So are you willing to make a sacrifice that isn't going to be noticed? What about comfortability? How comfortable are you hanging out with people who are similar to you? Pretty comfortable, right? What about people that aren't? Do you need to have a balance? I would argue that maybe you do. And I don't know what that balance is for you. Maybe you're super comfortable with it. Maybe you just don't prefer to be around people in general, so like any person is a sacrifice. I don't know your personality, so I can't tell you what that balance should be. But when you evaluate that relationship time-wise, maybe that's something that you could think of. Keep in mind that this is something our brothers and sisters from minority cultures experience every day. So in the majority culture, it's okay to step outside your comfort zone and do something or spend some time with something that's not inside that zone. And we talked a little bit about it already, but what about time? What time-related habits do you have that other people in this church don't have? Are you super scheduled and punctual, or are you laid back and spontaneous? What opportunities do you have to give up like that? You know, I don't know. And you're only going to find out if you start building some of those friendships and doing some of those other things that we talked about. So let me ask you the same question that I asked last week. Are you hospitable? Because I think that's all of this stuff can get rolled up under hospitality. I don't think it's just opening your home to life group. I don't think it's just opening your time to participate in a life group. I think that's part of it. And I got up in a little bit of a soapbox about life groups last week. But thinking about all these other things that we just talked about, are you hospitable? So we got just a couple of minutes left in class. Next week, we're going to do the sit-down forum conversation. So a couple of examples maybe. How have you shown this type of hospitality? Or how do you want to show hospitality now? Has this changed the way you think about that? Is there something you're going to do differently in the future? And I don't want to just put you on the spot, but let's maybe be uncomfortable for a minute. And remember, your own examples can help somebody else who's not a majority in that culture, too. So let's practice this just a little bit. I'm really bad about that. I talk to like the same three or four people every Sunday and every Wednesday, and that's kind of it. And being back at the welcome desk forces me to interact with literally everybody that comes in the door. So there's that. Yep. And I'm at welcome desk today, so walk by me again. Make me interact with you. What else? Yeah. Yeah, we use our 7:30 kids' bedtime like a hard stop, right? It's bedtime. I got to put the kids out. Sorry, guys. Peace out. You know, no, like, it's, yeah, do that sometime.
I'm going to blow up Mark's paradigm.
You never get out from under it. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's no qualifications on this for life circumstance. You know, and as a family group, maybe that's something that you need to consider. Like, how do I involve my children in this? How can I demonstrate a character trait or a point of sanctification that I should be, that my children should? And maybe people without kids can tolerate being around kids for a couple of minutes. It's a two-way street, right? So, yeah, families aren't an excuse, even though sometimes we use it. But it doesn't feel like a bad excuse, though, does it, right? Because you're like, oh, it's my family. I have to care for my family. No one's going to harsh on you for, like, I got kids and I got to take care of them. But, there's a balance to strike there. I mean, if I don't put my kids down for 7:30, I pay for it the next morning. But, again, an opportunity for sanctification. For me, personally. I go to work at 8, so I don't have to deal with it. For my wife. All right, give me one more and then we'll be dismissed. Oh, sure. Yeah, right. I mean, there's a million excuses there to not do it on either side of it. And yet, I think we see some zeal there. I think we see some consistency there. I think we see some sacrifice there. And I think there's some genuine affection there. So that was a great example. Thank you. All right, let me pray, and then we'll be dismissed. And then come back next week for an argument.